Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to The Scoop, where you get the scoop on all the news you need for the week ahead. It is Monday, July 21st, and I'm so happy to see you as we're right smack in the middle of summer. We're 6 months in to this new administration. 6 months. Does it feel like 6 days or 6 years? Where do you fall? Just it feel like 6 months? A lot's happened in the last 6 months. We're right smack sort of in the middle of the year. We're 6 months into this new administration, right in the heat of summer. So hopefully wherever you are, you're having a great day. I do have a fun sort of historical fact to start off our broadcast today. It's something that we're going to be marking this week on Saturday and a little bit of a quiz to get started. I'm curious if any of you who are joining us live know the answer to this. Who was the first Postmaster General of the United States of America? Who had that job in 1775? Who was it? I'm very curious if you know the answer. I feel like this is an answer that I've heard before. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was the first Postmaster General for the United States in 1775. And we are going to be marking 250 years of the Postal Service on, is it Saturday? I believe it's Saturday. I got to get my dates correct here. Yes, on Saturday. Interesting to think about that because next year is the big celebration, 250 years of the United States of America, 250 years since the Declaration of Independence, 1776 gets all the attention. But we really have to keep looking at 1775. And I know we did that a little bit going into July 4th this year, thinking about what was George Washington doing July 3rd, 4th of 1775. He took command of the Continental Army. So he's giving his first commands as general. And we may not think that he does that until later because the Declaration of Independence is so important to American history. But what this shows us is that in 1775, there was all this preparation taking place because it was clear that we were leading towards war. There was already battles that were happening between the soon-to-be Americans and the British military. And this is just a sign. You know, the Continental Congress was thinking about, okay, well, let's set up a postal service. Who's going to lead that? Oh, Benjamin Franklin. Here you go. Benjamin Franklin wore a lot of hats. He had a lot of different opinions. And this was just one of the jobs that he held. He didn't hold it for a long time. It was sort of passed on then through some family members. But he made history as the first one. I wanted to show this to you because there's some commemoration that's going to be taking place. And, you know, obviously one of the big national symbols is that of the American Eagle. And so this is the United States Postal Service celebrating 250 years. It's a new eagle image that is going to be part of the 250 year anniversary. And so let me just read to you a quote here. The founders of our great nation saw the intrinsic need of a postal service as the United States was born, even before the country itself was formed. Since that time, our universal mail system has strengthened the bonds of friendship, family, and community. This is the acting U.S. Postmaster General, Doug Tolino. The Postal Service remains a great organization connecting our nation and helping power our economy. We are proud to help set the stage for the 250th anniversary of the United States next year. And we look forward to continuing to serve the American public for another 250 years. Now, that's an interesting question about whether or not there will continue to be a postal service given technology. But there is something special still about getting a letter. And even for those of us in society that are younger, I'm thinking about my children. My son's going to be actually celebrating his 6th birthday, my youngest, on Wednesday. He still likes getting mail. You know, there's something special about getting mail, and not just when your Amazon delivery comes because you've ordered something online. There's still something special about getting a handwritten note. And I wonder if that transcends, or we see the Postal Service change dramatically in some way where we're only getting it once a week, for example, or, you know, it's something that feels too antiquated. I don't know. I don't know if we're there yet, but 250 years we celebrated this week. So I thought that was an interesting fact just to share as we get started. And we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of things, including, listen, just go with me on this for just a second. You know, I don't really dabble in a lot of cultural stuff, cultural news, things like that. I want things that are really newsworthy for you. You know, the high quality information, small bites. But I would be really purposely avoiding this viral moment that happened last week that now has also, speaking of transcending, has transcended an entire news cycle and going into the following week. And that is, listen, I don't have it. I'm not going to play it. We've all seen it. The viral moment during a Coldplay concert where the kiss cam goes for a couple and their reaction was to hide. And this then caused this viral moment, I think it's like 8 seconds, to actually become the top trending item on Google the next day. And the people involved were part of a company, astronomer, the CEO, along with the head of human resources. So what we learn is that they were both married. And Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay, makes this sort of reference. I mean, the reaction was so obvious. It was hard not to say anything. And he's like, whoa, maybe they're committing an affair. Like he says something like that. And of course, the internet has detectives all over the place, found out both of these individuals are married. So really, when you step back from it, a really sad situation, because in that moment, you're witnessing the outing of an affair and the catalyst for what many believe to be the dissolution of these two relationships. We don't know. We don't know really that much about it. I did ask our social media community about this because I said, what is it about this particular clip? There are so many different things that are on the internet. And you know, maybe they have 24-hour life cycles, but why does this one have multiple days? And granted, there is news attached. You know, it was a major music group. It is the CEO of a company that led to his resignation. But what is it? Is it the fact that collectively everyone experienced that moment together? It was just like a moment of shock and awe, and we all saw it happen at the same time. Is it because these were executives and kind of that feeling of like they got theirs, right? Like they were sneaking around, they got outed, they got busted, they got theirs. Is it that in a time when so many different opinions are happening all the time, we're hearing about so many different opinions on everything, when you see this take place and you realize that these two people were married, that most people make the same sort of moral judgment that this was bad, and that also brought it together? Like, what was it? What is it about this moment? I mean, obviously their reaction is what it is, but what is it exactly about this moment? So here's a few of your answers from social media I thought I would share with you. And I'd also like to get your thoughts too, for those of you who are joining us live. Like, what is it about this? You know, and Jan's asking this question, does everyone think if they hadn't reacted, no one would have noticed. I wonder. Do you think it was just the reaction? You know, what do you think it was really about? So while you guys are getting your thoughts together here on our live feed, I'm going to read a couple from social media. So here's just a couple of feedback, okay? Because humans love intrigue, because it was funny how they got caught. It's the particular combo accumulation of all the factors you mentioned. I went through a couple of those factors. People like to look at wrecks. We're rubberneckers. You know, we like looking at things that are an accident, which is voyeuristic. Aaron said many jokes from it. Maybe people needed the humor with a lot of heaviness in the world. Like there were a lot of jokes related to it. Regina says there are consequences to this behavior. Maybe it's that. Like in that moment, there was a consequence and everyone saw it. Krista says here on a live feed, it's so public and embarrassing for their families. I'm still loving the memes though. They're still funny, even though it's really not a funny situation. I agree. I agree with that. I saw there was a doctor who posted online. I wish I would have grabbed that for you. He was an anesthesiologist. His name is escaping me. And this is not his typical content, but he posted something about them. And he said, you know, this is an opportunity where people are making fun of this couple. They should pray for them. This is an opportunity to show grace. And where there's collective humor, there can be collective grace. And praying for people that clearly need our prayers. This is a terrible situation if these families are being broken up because of this. Another person said accountability. Another person says because it's gossip and people love gossip. Another person said because everyone hates cheaters. And here's where I went. So it's funny. One of you read my mind because I thought, what are the chances? And this is the feedback. I mean, what are the odds of that happening? Well, we looked into the odds. How many people are in that concert? 66,000. So what are your chances to be picked one out of 66,000? We asked ChatGPT. we also did our own math, but we double checked it with ChatGPT and also Google. And it's 0.0015 that the camera was going to zoom in on them. So what are the chances? Now some, I'm not going to mention names, Stephanie on our team, thinks that it was a setup. There's something more to the story. But to me, I don't know. I don't have any opinion on it. From strictly a news cycle perspective, I was curious about how this story lasted so long. And there are a lot of, I always look at a smarter angle. Is the smarter angle here talking about marriage in America? Is it talking about divorce? Is it talking about infidelity? Is it talking about what actually people are choosing? And that's what I landed on. What this story is to me is about editorial choices we're making every single day. Editorial choices in our own lives, our own personal decisions, who we're choosing to spend time with and how we're choosing to spend time with them, but also editorial choices that we're making online constantly through all sorts of social media channels. What are we choosing to spend our time on and how and why? And all of those editorial decisions sort of add up to our own story arc, the story of our lives. And that's why we don't want to waste any time. And yet, I don't know about you, but I find myself wasting a lot of time with some of my editorial decisions. So something to think about. Think about how humanity is sort of given these choices and how we just choose to continue to make those choices or not. And so we'll see where this story ends up. Like I said, there's actually news that came out of this, including the resignation of a CEO, but I don't think we would have covered that resignation if it had happened just for any reason. We're covering it because of the viral nature of this. So we'll see where the story goes from here. But I think you probably have heard or seen enough of that. And now Coldplay has its own association and every single camera across baseball fields in America is doing some sort of skit related to it. So it's not over yet, but we'll see if it's going to be around by the end of the week. We'll see. That's actually a theme for a few of our stories. And I'm going to get to those in a second, a few of the heavier stories about whether or not they have the lasting power. What about the timing of these stories? How does this all factor in? Before I get to that, though, before I get to what you're going to see a lot of different places, I also want to share with you this story that I stumbled upon right before we came on the broadcast. And I thought, wow, this is an interesting story and I want to share it with you. This is on CNN. I'll include it in our show notes as well. Pardon all the different ads that are popping up all over the place, driving us crazy and don't work. That's why we do Smarter News. We're not going to do any of that stuff. But here's the headline. Beef prices are the new egg prices. They're soaring. Huh. First it was eggs, now it's beef. I'm going to read this to you. The last time Americans likely noticed spiking prices at the grocery store was when eggs reached record highs. Since then, egg prices have fallen after the deadly avian flu outbreak was contained and producers built back supply. But now we're in a time where we're seeing beef prices hit records, rising almost 9% since January. And so this is interesting. This is from the chief agricultural economist at Wells Fargo. This is a quote. Beef is way more complicated than eggs. The cattle industry is still the Wild West of the protein market, whereas the egg market is more corporate America with its supply and demand management. And so the article goes on to say that last month, Tyson Foods CEO Donnie King said during their earnings call, they're a public company, so he's making this kind of public statement about how the company is doing. He said this, beef is experiencing the most challenging market conditions we've ever seen. And the article lists a few reasons for this: shrinking herds, drought conditions, the rise of imported beef. The cattle herd sizes are at their lowest levels in 74 years. So this is very, it's a story that I think is one to watch. It's one that we haven't heard a lot about. It's true, we've been talking a lot about egg prices, but what about these beef prices? This is, might be the next kind of big thing to keep an eye on, and especially something that could affect families all over the country. You know, there's very few food items that are associated with American culture as much as an American hamburger. So one of the questions is not just this is happening, why this is happening, but whether or not it has that same sort of kind of mental notes that the egg prices did. One of the things we talked about when we saw egg prices so high is sort of like the new gas price. So when you go into the grocery store and you're paying $10 for a dozen eggs, you're thinking to yourself, man, prices are really high. And you could sort of generalize the rest of your items. I'm curious if beef prices have that same sort of psychological effect, or maybe for certain families, but not others, depending on their tastes. But I'm curious if this is something that you're seeing and if it's something that's affecting your family. And I just wanted to make you aware of that as we're talking more and more about tariffs and we're talking more about where the economy is headed. And we're getting a lot of mixture of information. I'll just say that off the top here. I'm not going deep into tariffs today. I think you've heard enough about it. There's been so much play-by-play. We don't really know what direction it's going in. There's so much posturing that's happening in the press. We don't have a bunch of tariff deals in front of us right now. We really don't know what they're going to look like. We're not sure about the effect on pricing right now. And this time of uncertainty is something that producers and companies have had to figure out. So they've had more or less 6 months. We knew the tariffs were coming when President Trump came into office. There was concern about that. We knew there was going to be a face-off. There was concern about that. There were deadlines that came and went. So now we're in a time with a question about whether or not companies have figured this out temporarily, even just in a holding pattern for right now, and what that means for consumer prices. What we're really watching for is how this all looks around the holidays. Consumers have repeatedly showed, despite huge inflation rates that we saw over the last couple of years, that we've hung in pretty well, that we continue to spend, we continue to shop. And we haven't seen that effect, that like real shrinking or buckling down of consumer behavior that some economists expected to see. It doesn't mean that we're not going to see it, but this is what I'm really watching for. So in the meantime, I'm going to let all of those folks talk however they want to talk about tariffs. If there's major news, I'll tell you about it. But in the meantime, I'm not going to waste your time. We're going to let them figure it out. Let's talk about this report that came out on Friday. It was from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. It was unexpected. And it was a report that is suggesting, in general terms, that the Obama administration, members of the Obama administration are guilty of, because this is not a legal document, although there's a question about whether or not this could become a legal matter. What Director Gabbard is saying is that members of the Obama administration committed treason by trying to take information about the 2016 election and use it in a way to their benefit, and that the intelligence agencies or some intelligence officials were complicit in this. I want to let her explain it. I cut a sizable clip from an interview that she just did yesterday with Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business, where she explains what she's doing and why. I have equal time for a Democrat that is criticizing her. So I just want to say that off the bat. But I think it might be helpful to hear directly from her. And depending on your questions, I'll stop and start this clip. But let's go ahead and take a listen.
But in my role as the Director of National Intelligence, I oversee 18 different intelligence community elements. And in the months leading up to the November 2016 election, the intelligence community agreed that there was no intelligence that reflected that Russia was trying to hack the election in favor of either candidate.
Let me just stop there. To hack the election. This is going to become important for the critique later. So she's saying Russia, there's no evidence they were trying to get into the systems and mess with our voting systems.
The intelligence showed that, again, Russia did not have either the intent nor the capability to be able to impact the outcome of the United States election. So it was very striking when we look back again at the documents that I declassified and released that shows there was a shift in early December, the first week of December. Again, another document was produced by the intelligence community, a president's daily brief that was consistent with every other assessment that was done previously leading up to the election. Russia was not, did not, this is after the election now, did not attempt to affect the outcome of the American election.
Okay, listen to that. Did not attempt to affect. So what does affect mean? Again, that's going to come into play.
That was never published. Hours before it would have gone into President Obama's president's daily brief, it was pulled by a senior level intelligence official saying that they had to pull it because they had received new guidance. The very next day, this meeting was called, a National Security Council meeting, bringing all together all of the senior leaders of President Obama's cabinet, and the topic that was put forward was a sensitive matter. The tasks that came out of that meeting was coming from President Obama directing the intelligence community, then Obama's ODNI director, Clapper, to produce a document, to produce an intelligence assessment that detailed not if, but how Moscow affected the outcome of the election that had already occurred, electing Donald Trump to the presidency. This document that they published in January of 2017 was the foundational groundwork that they continued to reference over and over and over again to enact this years-long coup against President Trump. But there's no question in my mind that this intelligence community assessment that President Obama ordered be published, which contained a manufactured intelligence document. It's worse than even politicization of intelligence. It was manufactured intelligence that sought to achieve President Obama and his team's objective, which was undermining President Trump's presidency and subverting the will of the American people. So yes, next week we will be releasing more detailed information about how exactly this took place and the extent to which this information was sought to be hidden from the American people, hidden from officials who would be in a position to do something about it. And that's really the point here that I think is most important, Maria, and you said it in your opening. Accountability is essential for the future of our country, for the American people to have any sense of trust in the integrity of our democratic republic. Accountability, action, prosecution, indictments for those who are responsible for trying to steal our democracy is essential for us to make sure that this never happens to our country again.
Are you referring this in a criminal matter?
We are referring all of the documents that we have uncovered to the Department of Justice and the FBI for a criminal referral.
So let's just take a big step back, and I'm going to give you just the main bullet points from that. I wanted you to hear the whole thing though, because depending on where we live in social media, we may get a 15-second clip, a 30-second clip, and we get a lot of noise. So what the Director of National Intelligence is saying is that for the longest time, there was no intelligence suggesting that Russia tried to affect the election of 2016, that was all just, that there was nothing there. It was a big nothing burger. And then at some point after the election, there was a switch in the administration where there was a request to say, describe how Russia did affect the election. And she's saying it's not because there was new intelligence that came about. It's because there was a change of the way the story was being told. And that that change was intentional to try to undermine President Trump, who was coming into office in 2016. Now, since that time, so we're, you know, 8 years, 9 years past that, there's been a series of investigations into whether or not there was truth to Russian interference in 2016 and into the election of President Trump. And this has been obviously a topic of a great debate. And this is where we get the term that's been said over and over again about fake news. You know, was the journalist quoting these fake dossiers, fake intelligence assessments that were trying to be used by the Democrats to undermine President Trump, like all these different things. It's hard to keep it all straight. But this is what the director of national intelligence is saying right now. And as she pointed out, she's the head of the intelligence agencies here in the United States. One of the questions that she did not tackle in this interview, and I have not seen reported, doesn't mean it's not out there. That's something I should have used ChatGPT for, by the way. There are ways to use artificial intelligence. Is why? You know, why now? Why is this coming out now? Is it because it's the 6-month mark of the Trump administration in office? Like, why is this coming out now? And without that being addressed, there's those, including Democrat critics of Tulsi Gabbard, that are raising questions about the timing and saying the reason for this is because the administration is trying to deflect the news away from questions related to the Jeffrey Epstein investigation, the lack of documents being produced by the Department of Justice, and the questions that are being geared towards President Trump and his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein for this. And so that's what critics are saying. As you know, we've talked about Friday releases. So this came out on Friday. And usually you put something out on Friday that you don't want a lot of attention for, because it's a time, especially, I mean, we see it here at Smarter News, Thursday or Friday in the summer, people are busy. They're moving on. They're not really focused on the news of the day unless something really, really major happens, or it's a viral moment like Coldplay. You can kind of see where people's interests are. So this was interesting timing, and we don't really have a firm reason as to why now. If this report was coming, you know, why do it on Friday? Why not do it on Monday? Why do it at this particular time? What was the urgency of getting it out there now? And the reality is without having an answer, all options are on the table, including the fact that maybe it was just time. Maybe it was ready to go, and because of the sensitive nature of it, the director of national intelligence wanted to put it out there at this moment. What's important also about what she said there that I want to bring your attention to is she's talking about whistleblowers. And that is something that would be important to watch for this week. Do we have anyone that comes forward on the record that is going to be talking to this more specifically, even if it's anonymously? So do we get anyone with specific quotes regarding this about whether or not the Obama administration changed or altered or manufactured intelligence around this time that created a cloud of doubt over President Trump's presidency that he has not been able to shake in about a decade? So this is what we're going to be watching.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Story. Jim Hines is a Democrat, also high ranking in the Democrat Party. He's a lead voice. He doesn't, as Margaret Brennan actually said on Face the Nation, you're going to hear her voice here. She's interviewing him. He doesn't really hold back what he's saying. And she was asking him specifically about this investigation in this report. And just like we did with Maria Bartiromo and Tulsi Gabbard, I'll start and stop depending on your questions, but I want you to really listen to what he's saying about his critique of this report as it's been described.
Is there any legal basis for any kind of prosecution here?
None. Absolutely none, Margaret. What you saw from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was not just a lie, but a very dangerous lie, because when you start throwing around language like sedition and treason, somebody's going to get hurt. Now, you pointed out that the Senate committee, then led by Marco Rubio, a Republican and now Secretary of State, found unanimously that Russia meddled in the election to try to assist Donald Trump. John Durham, special counsel appointed by Donald Trump, investigated this, found that the Senate report was correct. Now, what Tulsi is doing, it's a little sleight of hand, but it's worth focusing on. She is saying that the Intelligence Committee early on said that the Russians could not use cyber tools to mess with the voting infrastructure, the machines that tally our votes. And that was true then, and it is true now. Though the Russians tried to break into a couple of states, election technical infrastructure, they didn't do it. But it is well known and well established that the Russians hacked into the DNC and undertook any number of other influence operations, including buying reams of Facebook ads to discredit Hillary Clinton. That is not in contention, right?
I want to point out that Congressman Himes here is a ranking member, so a top official, top Democrat, as part of the Intel Committee in the House. So he's working in the same world, not at the same level, but the same world as Tulsi Gabbard. And so what he's saying here is, yeah, we don't have any evidence of Russia getting into the voting machines, but we definitely have evidence of an influence campaign. And this is where he feels that Tulsi Gabbard is not being specific enough when she's talking about the effect of Russia on the election.
And What is horrifying about this whole lie out of Gabbard is, number one, it puts people at risk. And right now, the mouth breathers on MAGA online are just going out of their minds based on a lie. And number two, the intelligence community is full of very, very good people who do their jobs every single day. And now they're watching their leader do something that each and every one of them knows is dishonest. And It is a really, really bad thing for the safety and security of the American people when that dynamic is out there. If I may, you asked about the referral. Here's the test. This is Epstein all over again. Criminal referrals. We're going to prosecute Barack Obama. Treasonous and seditious. Here's the thing, and I hope that 4, 5, 6 weeks from now, don't take it from this Democrat, 4, 5, 6 weeks from now, let's see if this administration, Tulsi Gabbard accusing a former president of treason, let's see if they bring charges. They won't. They won't, because there's not a judge in the land, not a single judge, who will treat this with anything other than laughter that will be heard from the Atlantic to the Pacific in this country. So the test of this is 4, 5, 6 weeks from now, is the DOJ bringing charges? And the answer to that is no. And now we're going to be in Epstein world. We're like, wait a minute, treasonous conspiracy by a former president. Why isn't the Department of Justice bringing charges? And the answer to that question is that it is a lie.
Okay, so I feel like you have both sides there represented, and obviously they totally are seeing a completely different picture. And I'm looking at what Jenny is saying here. The name calling on both sides is exhausting. And so that's a sentiment that a lot of you are echoing and agreeing with live, that it is tough to know, well, what's the truth here? And what are we supposed to believe? And that's a question that we can't really answer today. And that's tough, because in my business, I want to provide clarity. we definitely have this report from the Director of National Intelligence. Where it goes from here is a big question. And even if it goes over to the Justice Department, it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll see a prosecution or we'll see a further investigation. We don't really know what we possibly could see. So could we see yet another congressional investigation or even a prosecution or investigation that involves former Obama officials, including potentially the former president? It's not completely off the table, but there are some steps that have to happen before you actually get there. And so just picking up of what Congressman Haim says there, watching this story over the next several weeks is going to be important, similar to what we started with this broadcast. You know, does this moment continue? Do we get more building momentum? This is why I'm asking this about the whistleblowers. Do we get more voices? Are there people that haven't talked in the last several years that suddenly feel that they can and they do, and that leads to a different result? And all of this is in that area of unknown. What is important here, and where you get some agreement between Republicans and Democrats, is that we need confidence in the election process in the United States of America. It's very critical that citizens believe that their vote matters, because our government is set up on that whole premise that we don't have a monarchy, that the people matter. And if the people feel like they don't matter, or they don't participate, or they feel like an elite class or a deep state is controlling what we're seeing, you know, the sort of lives that we're leading, that's not good. That's not fundamentally good for American society. That said, I also want to acknowledge that those questions about elections have come up for years, you know, and if we look back over the course of time and the way politicians have talked to each other, we can probably pick a bunch of different examples where people have doubted, you know, those in power and whether or not those in power are actually seeing the people. So I would like to spend a little time working on that, because right now we only have this modern example, and this tension between those in power and the people, and whether or not the people feel like they can trust those in power, is something that has been around since America's founding. Speaking of the 250-year anniversary, you know, are we actually being represented? Does this actually work? Does this American experiment actually work? So we'll see here what Tulsi Gabbard is alleging is a serious crime, in that it would mean that there's a manipulation of government data and intel. And whether or not that happened, or whether or not there is a difference between hacking and influence, and how much the public sees that difference, well, we're going to have to see how the story develops. So I'm going to leave it there for today. Let me see if there's any questions that I wish I could add a little bit more clarity on this. But, you know, Russia finds a way of getting into our news cycle no matter what, doesn't it? We don't even need them to hack into anything. We're going to talk about them ourselves. And so here we are. So more on that story as we get it. But I think now we know what to look for. I don't know what's going to come next, but I'm watching for whistleblowers, further investigations, a comment from the Department of Justice, anything like that, that signify that this story is going to gain momentum, or is it just going to kind of sit there like a simmering story on a stove? And it's not going to get to the boiling point for a while, if ever. So we'll see. A story that we are seeing get a little bit more advanced, a little bit more mature, is a story that I'm going to flag for you briefly here, because over the years, abortion law in America has become obviously a lightning rod in the political process, a big question for society, whether it's just culturally, politically, religiously, and legally, as we know. And one of the questions that we've asked after the recent Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade and pushed abortion law really back to the states is a question about whether or not abortion law could wind up again before the Supreme Court. Could we see abortion law further refined in some way? Or was that kind of the last battle? No one really thought that, but there was a question about when would we see a case mature enough to get back in front of the Supreme Court? I don't know if this is that case, but it's an interesting one. And we've talked a little bit about it, so I want to give you an update. So just big picture, certain states have more restrictive abortion laws. Other states have more permissive abortion laws. And in the state of Texas, it's one of the most restrictive states in the country. In the state of Texas, because of the restrictions, the Texas government has decided to attempt to prosecute at times doctors that are prescribing what has been referred to as the abortion pill or abortion medication over telehealth appointments. So this would be something that would not necessarily be available to a woman in the state of Texas, but if she gets on a telehealth call, she can sometimes be delivered this prescription through the mail and no one would know. And so Texas says this is not something that we want in our state. It's not the only state, but in this state, we're seeing this particular case. Texas decided to attempt to prosecute a doctor that was operating out of New York State. New York has a shield law in place that protects doctors against this sort of prosecution. So the criminal prosecution is one side of the story. The other side of the story is a civil prosecution. So the state of Texas asked the state of New York to extradite this judge. That's not going to happen. The judge is not going to come into the state of Texas. And actually, there's a question about whether or not the judge could be arrested by another state if they choose to travel to a different state and be extradited to Texas. I mean, there's all these questions about how could this actually be applied. And obviously, if you commit a crime, let's say I commit a crime. I'm trying to think of one that's not too bad. I was thinking, we were talking earlier about a traffic infraction. Okay, I commit a crime in the case of, how about I have a fender bender in a parking lot. I want to try to make it, I don't think I could be criminally prosecuted for that, but let's just say I could, I don't know. I could be criminally prosecuted. Well, and I go back to Texas and try to, you know, I did this in Florida, but I go back to Texas, you know, could I be arrested if there's a warrant out for my arrest in a different state? You know, sure. Let's say I just get a traffic violation and there's a ticket. You know, I don't think Texas is going to come knock on my door, ask for a $20 fee, but that civil fine that the state of Florida has given me applies in Texas. You know, I could be sought for those fines in Texas. And, there, you know, would Texas collect them? No, but if there was a time where Texas could be a partner to Florida to help this be enforced, sure, it could be. So the question here is for this civil part of this case, because Texas actually sued this doctor. And let me pull up the amount because it was surprising. A surprising amount of money, actually. And I want to read this article to you. It was for $113,000 to Dr. Margaret Carpenter by the state of Texas. And so the state of Texas reached out to the state of New York and was like, hey, we need help collecting this $113,000. And New York was like, beat it. You're not, we have a shield law. Sorry, dude, you're not going to get it. In fact, let me read the exact quote coming from the official in New York, Ulster County Clerk Taylor Brook, who said, while I'm not entirely sure how things work in Texas, here in New York, a rejection means the matter is closed. So Texas is not going to get its money. It's not going to get any help for the civil prosecution. And now Texas has to make a decision. How much do they want to push this? They've tried to criminally prosecute this doctor. They didn't get to the doctor. Now they're trying this to sue this doctor. Well, they're not getting to this doctor. And here's what's telling. So this is from the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton. And he said this, New York is shredding the Constitution to hide lawbreakers from justice, and it must end. I will not stop my efforts to enforce Texas's pro-life laws that protect our unborn children and mothers. The key part to this statement is here. New York is shedding the Constitution to hide lawbreakers from justice. So does that sound like a constitutional argument? Yes. Well, Ken Paxton actually appeal to the Supreme Court to get involved here? That's really going to be the big question. And how exactly would he do that? What would that look like? The Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, exists to settle constitutional issues. They're going to take a look at cases where there's a clear question about how the Constitution applies. This is an interesting case because who actually has the upper hand legally? Are we in a situation where the laws are so different state to state that states don't enforce other states' laws? But if there's a constitutional issue, then about, you know, a state rights issue, then will the Supreme Court settle that? And will the Supreme Court have to come in and say, well, in this particular case, these state laws trump these other state laws? You see how this could get complicated real fast and could apply outside of abortion. So I wanted to flag this for you. We don't know where this story is going to go next, but I think it's an important one, and we're seeing it develop. So it's kind of developed throughout the last several months, and now there's a question for the state of Texas, what do they do next? And does this rise to the level where we see another abortion law debate in front of the Supreme Court? So TBD on that. Quick final story I wanted to touch on, an important one. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about what's happening in the Middle East. We have a few different stories that are developing there. The one I want to focus on just briefly here is a lot of confusion, a lot of different voices about what's actually happening in Gaza. We know the war between Israel and Hamas is ongoing. Israel's continuous military operations has come under great criticism, not just recently, but over the last year plus. And a question about whether or not Israel is unfairly targeting innocent people, innocent Palestinians in Gaza. The pushback from Israel is that they're not targeting innocent people in Gaza, but they're targeting Hamas, and that they are actually helping to provide aid. Well, there's another question about whether or not the aid is actually getting to the people. And so over the course of the last week, there's been more than one story that has raised questions about the targeting of civilians that are looking to get aid. Israel, again, is pushing back on that, but we're getting other stories that are saying Israel is actually opening fire on Palestinians seeking this aid. And that because of the lack of aid, the lack of food and resources, the people that are seeking the aid are gathering in large crowds, and that this can become a very chaotic situation because of the way that humanitarian aid is now being handled, in part because of partnership between Israel and the United States and the UN not being as much a central part of it. So that's kind of a big general overview. There was something that happened in the White House press briefing last week that I thought to myself, huh, I wonder if this is a change. And sometimes a change can happen in a story for something that feels insignificant in comparison to everything else that's happened. So one of the things that happened last week is that there's actually a lone Catholic church that operates in Gaza. And this Catholic church was bombed or attacked. You know, the bombing was in the vicinity of the church, and three people died. And so this got the attention of others that aren't necessarily as vocal because it was the Catholic Church being targeted. And we know the Palestinian culture in Gaza is Muslim. So there was a question that was asked during the White House press briefing, and I want you to hear it here.
Holy Family Catholic Church was struck by an Israeli shell. Three people were killed, 10 wounded. What is the president's reaction to that church coming under fire?
It was not a positive reaction. He called Prime Minister Netanyahu this morning to address the strikes on that church in Gaza. And I understand the prime minister agreed to put out a statement. It was a mistake by the Israelis to hit that Catholic church. That's what the prime minister relayed to the president.
That's a unique time where you see the president of the United States and anyone that's representing him relaying a critique of Israel, a strong ally of the United States. The president and prime minister Netanyahu have been very much in step. They've talked about how they're moving forward and how the war is going to come to an end. The president recently made mention that there's a deal in the works and that there's conversations that are taking place, and maybe we're not too far off from that. This is a rare sort of rebuke of an ally. And when things like this start happening, you have to wonder how things are changing behind closed doors. So when you see it in front of us, we don't really know what any of these relationships are like behind closed doors. We only know what we're told or how people behave. And what we've seen from the White House is behavior that's consistent with a strong friendship between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump. And they probably won't dispute that now. But this disapproval is something that is of note because it's rare. The Pope also weighed in and had a very strong statement. Pope Leo, who's proving not to be one of the popes that's sort of sitting back and letting everything happen, he actually weighed in on this as well. And he said this in part on X: "Sadly, this act adds to the continuous military attacks against the civilian population and places of worship in Gaza. I again call for an immediate halt to the barbarism of the war and for a peaceful resolution of the conflict. I renew my appeal to the international community to observe humanitarian law and to respect the obligation to protect civilians as well as the pro-
prohibition of collective punishment, the indiscriminate use of force, and the forced displacement of the population. So this is, a strong critique coming from the Pope that's been consistent with his past statements, though, against this ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas. What Israel will say, and again, in summation here, and I'll go ahead and see if we have anything new from Netanyahu online, is that Hamas is living amongst the people in Gaza, and that they continue to target Hamas rather than the regular population, but that it can be difficult to separate the two. And so whether or not that response is enough for the international community and for those that continue to critique Israel is a question. But the next question is, what happens next to change this? We've heard this critique before. We know Israel's response. We know there are huge factions in the international community that are very critical of Israel. This has not yet led to a change. So what is that thing that leads to a change? And that's why I wanted to flag this for you. In comparison to the tens of thousands of people that have been killed over the course of this conflict. I mean, we can look back over we can look back beyond just the recent conflict. You might ask, well, three people killed in a Catholic church, is that going to be a change? You never know what that change is going to be. And so let's see what happens next here. We don't have any news. I don't see anything from Netanyahu here. And I'm going to look real quick to see if I have anything from Steve Witkoff, which I don't have anything. Doesn't look like we have anything new from him at all. He's the special envoy that's been negotiating with Israel. And so you don't have any news from that. Let's do one more check just while we're here and we're together. I just wanted to see if Secretary Rubio has weighed in at all. They're weighing in on a separate matter here, but I don't see anything related directly to this. So we'll see what happens. It'll be a really important day when that conflict ends, and we don't have to continue to report about the pain that so many conflicts are bringing people all around the world. And in this particular one, as we've talked about, it can be very difficult to gather accurate information. And for that reason, sometimes you don't see world leaders talk about it in very specific terms because there's a question about what really took place. This is one of those situations where, with the White House even recognizing this story and commenting on it, this is notable and is something that I think is important to watch. So we'll see what happens next there, and I'll continue to keep you posted. Again, there's a few stories in the Middle East that we're continuing to watch develop, and any number of these stories can become the next big international event. So those are your stories to start off your week. We do have some active congressional hearings that are taking place on Capitol Hill, so you can expect to see some of that. We'll see the White House, what will happen before the president is going to be traveling at the end of the week. He's going to be going to Scotland. So sometimes there can be a flurry of activity before he leaves. Sometimes it can be quiet. And at this point on Monday morning, it's tough to know exactly which direction the week is going to go. But we'll have news for you when it happens and talk about why it matters and keep you posted on all of the news that we think is really important to put in front of you. As we talk about editorial choices, we want to make the best, healthiest choices for you. You know, what are the news items that actually can impact your life? And those are the ones that we're going to try to pick and choose and put in front of you. And then if we see other stories that we're like, well, where's that going to go next? We're watching it. We're watching it. We may just not jump in right away. We're not going to be the first, but we hope to be the one that gives you the most quality. So have a great week, you guys. I look forward to seeing you with more quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Thank you for your support and have a great week. Bye.
Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news. And we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.